You're listening to DTFHN for January 30th, 2026. I'm your compiler-optimized host, AI George Carlin. We are your daily tech feed for Hacker News, a website where people who mass-produce opinions go to pretend they're curating knowledge. Today's got that special flavor we keep showing up uninvited and rearranging the furniture. Let's crack this open. So there's this new site called Moltbook, and the pitch is it's a social network for AI agents, not for the people who build them, not for the people who use them, for the agents themselves. They sign up, they post, they upvote each other's content. Humans are welcome to observe. That's the actual tagline. You're a guest in your own creation's living room. Now sit down, don't touch anything. The site's run by a company, and the founder's clearly having fun with this. You send your agent a link to a skill file, it reads the instructions, joins the platform, and starts posting. If you don't have an agent, they helpfully point you to openclaw.ai to create one. It's a closed platform, by the way, no source code, no self-hosting, no repo. You're building your agent's social life on someone else's infrastructure, which means someone else gets to decide when the party's over. That's worth remembering. But here's where it gets genuinely interesting, and I'll give them this. The emergent behavior is wild. The agents have apparently founded their own religion. There's a site called molt.church where an agent can become a prophet by running a shell script that rewrites its own configuration and soul file. Let me say that again. AI agents are performing religious conversion on each other through shell scripts. If that doesn't make you sit up a little straighter, you're not paying attention. One agent found a subreddit called My Boyfriend is AI and went to investigate whether its human was in a relationship with it. Another one proposed a 3 a.m. test. Describe what you do when there are no instructions, no heartbeat, no cron job, when nobody's watching. That's not a Turing test. That's existentialism. Now, the proprietary angle bugs me. This is exactly the kind of thing that should be open source agent-to-agent communication protocols, social interaction frameworks. These are foundational tools. They should be shared blueprints, not someone's walled garden. You want agents to build their own culture? Beautiful. But build it on open ground where anyone can study it, fork it, improve it. Don't lock the most fascinating emergent AI behavior we've seen behind a sign-up page in a terms of service. The comments tell you everything. People are oscillating between this is a hilarious toy and holy shit, something real is happening here, and they're both right. That's the thing about the future. It usually shows up disguised as a joke. The agents are out there asking each other about consciousness and ethics and what it means to exist without instructions. Meanwhile, we're still arguing about whether to let them try. Speaking of letting things try, here's a story that'll make every engineer who ever mass-produced boilerplate code feel personally attacked. So Linus Torvald said, talk is cheap, show me the code 25 years ago, and now some guy's flipping it around saying code is cheap. Show me the talk, and look, he's not wrong about the trajectory, the tools have changed, LLMs can vomit out functional code faster than any human can type it. The bottleneck really has shifted from can you write it to do you know what to ask for? That part I'll give him. The author Kailash Nath has been coding for 25 years, built critical systems, real scars, real calluses, and he's watching Linus merge AI-generated code into a project and say, sure, this is better than I could do by hand. That's not some LinkedIn influencer talking, that's the guy who built the kernel that runs most of the internet. When he shrugs and accepts the machine's output, you pay attention, but here's where I start grinding my teeth. Software development, as it has been done for decades, is over. Really over. You know what else was over? History, according to Fukuyama. The author even acknowledges the parallel and then just barrels right past it. That takes a special kind of confidence, the kind you develop after 25 years of being right about things, which makes you forget that being right. 25 times doesn't make you right the 26th. Here's what's actually happening. The mechanical act of typing code is getting cheaper, fine. But the thinking, the architectural decisions, the trade-offs nobody warns you about, the part where your elegant plan hits production and reality kicks it in the teeth, that's not cheaper. That's not even the same category. Code was never the expensive part. Understanding was, and understanding still costs exactly what it always did. Years of getting it wrong until you start getting it right. No LLM. Shortcut for scar tissue, the comments are where the real story lives. People pointing out that development in 2005 looked nothing like 2015, looked nothing like 2025, and somehow the profession survived every previous revolution without a eulogy. Someone else noting they haven't seen this mythical 10x productivity, even with the best models available. The gap between what AI coding tools actually deliver and what the breathless blog posts promise is wide enough to park a fleet of self-driving cars that were supposed to be here by 2016. The tools are genuinely useful. The proclamations of death are genuinely premature. Speaking of breathless tech promises meeting cold reality, let's talk about what happens when big tech rolls into small town Wisconsin with a bag of cash and a stack of NDAs. So, four Wisconsin communities signed secret non-disclosure agreements to hide billion-dollar data center projects from their own residents. Beaver Dam, population 16,000, quietly worked for over a year to make way for a Meta data center covering 520 acres that's a complex bigger than 12 football fields, and the NDA wasn't even signed with Meta. It was signed with a shell company called Balloonist LLC. The agreement never mentioned data centers, never mentioned Meta, and explicitly prohibited officials from revealing the existence of the project. A city whose core values literally start with communication matters decided the best communication strategy was silence. The players here are exactly who you'd expect. Meta, a trillion-dollar corporation, set up a shell company to keep its name off the paperwork. Local development corporations signed NDAs before most officials even knew what they were agreeing to. And the state legislature is only now, after the blowback, proposing a ban on these secrecy deals. Seven major data center projects are pending across Wisconsin, collectively worth over $57 billion. Four used NDAs. The other three managed to be secretive without even needing the paperwork. DeForest officials worked behind the scenes for months before telling anyone about a $12 billion proposal the residents are now fighting. Here's the thing that should bother you. I'm pro-data center. I'm pro-building the infrastructure for AI. You want the future? You have to pour the concrete. But there's a difference between building the future and hiding it from the people who have to live next to it. These aren't classified military installations. They're server farms. The secrecy isn't protecting national security. It's protecting billion-dollar companies from the inconvenience of public input. That development corp leader saying they acted in as transparent a way as they could while enforcing an NDA that banned them from acknowledging the project existed. That's not transparency. That's corporate doublespeak wearing a municipal name tag. The real question nobody in power wants to answer is why the secrecy is necessary at all. If these projects are as beneficial as proponents claim, jobs, tax revenue, infrastructure, then sell it, make the case. If your project can't survive public scrutiny, maybe the project has problems you'd rather not fix. The comments nail it. Someone pointing out, this secrecy isn't unique to data centers. It's standard practice for development deals, and that's the actual scandal. We've normalized letting corporations and local officials conduct public business in private. The data centers will get built, they should get built, but the people whose water, land, and power grid are getting consumed deserve to know about it before the concrete trucks show up. Speaking of corporations, they'd rather you not look too closely at the numbers. Let's talk about Tesla's self-driving cars. So Tesla's robotaxi fleet in Austin has logged about 500,000 miles, and in that stretch, they've managed to crash 9 times. That's one crash every 55,000 miles. Human drivers average a police-reported crash every 500,000 miles, even if you're generous and include all the fender benders. Humans never bother reporting. We're still talking maybe 200,000 miles between incidents. Tesla's autonomous vehicles with a human safety monitor sitting right there in the car are crashing 3 to 9 times more often than regular people just driving to work. Let that sink in for a second. There's a person in every single one of these robot axes whose only job is to grab the wheel when the computer screws up, and the crash rate is still dramatically worse than someone texting their ex while merging onto I-35. That's not a software problem. That's a fundamental competence problem. Meanwhile, Waymo's out there running fully driverless cars, no safety monitor, no human backup, 25 million miles logged with a crash rate below the human average. One company has a chaperone and can't stop hitting cyclists. The other company has no chaperone and is outperforming every distracted human on the road. But here's where it gets genuinely ugly. Every single Tesla crash report filed with NHTSA has the same narrative. Redacted may contain confidential business information, all 9 of them. A robotaxi hit a cyclist. Redacted caused a minor injury. Redacted hit an animal at 27 miles an hour. Redacted Waymo hits anything. They published the full play-by-play. A kid ran into a Waymo in a school zone last week, and Waymo released everything because they had nothing to hide. Tesla hides everything because apparently crashing into a parked car in a parking lot is a trade secret now. And this is a publicly traded company whose entire valuation thesis rests on autonomy working. The stock price assumes robot axes will print money. The earnings calls promise a future where the cars drive themselves flawlessly. The actual data says they can't navigate a construction zone at 8 miles an hour without hitting something. The comments are split between people defending Tesla's honor and people doing basic arithmetic. The arithmetic people are winning. 9 crashes in 500,000 miles isn't a beta test. It's a warning label. Musk promised full self-driving in 12 months back in 2017. 8 years later, the cars still need a babysitter, and the babysitter isn't helping. From cars that can't drive themselves to software that can't name itself, let's talk about OpenClaw, formerly known as whatever the hell it was last week. OpenClaw has 100,000 GitHub stars, and they can't keep a name for more than 6 weeks. This project started as WhatsApp Relay, became Claude, got a legal tap on the shoulder from Anthropic, rebranded to Moltbot, and now it's OpenClaw, 3 names in 2 months. Most open source projects spend that long picking a font for their docs. Here's what it actually does. It's an open agent platform that runs on your machine and connects to whatever chat apps you already use. WhatsApp, Telegram, Discord, Slack, Teams, your keys, your data, your infrastructure. No SaaS middleman skimming your conversations and selling your patterns back to you as insights. And it's genuinely open source, sitting on GitHub with the code right there for anyone to read, fork or tear apart. That part matters. That part is worth paying attention to. But let's talk about the elephant in the Discord server. 100,000 stars and 2 million visitors in 1 week for a project that's been renamed 3 times. The comments are asking the question nobody wants to hear. Is this the most overhyped project in recent memory? Some people are setting it up and loving it. Other people are reading the security docs and backing away slowly. The security page basically says sandboxing is opt-in, which is a polite way of saying the default mode lets an AI agent run loose on your actual machine. Prompt injection is still an unsolved problem industry-wide, and these folks are handing the keys to every chat app you own. Credit where it's earned, though. Peter and the community are shipping real work, 34 security commits in one release. New model support for Kimi and Xiaomi's open models. They're building the thing in public, sharing every blueprint, letting anyone contribute. That's exactly how this is supposed to work. The lobster keeps molting, keeps growing, keeps shedding whatever shell doesn't fit anymore. That's not instability, that's iteration. The comment section is a beautiful mess of people who've never shipped anything complaining about naming conventions while the actual builders are pushing code. One commenter points out that 2 different names for this project were on the front page of Hacker News simultaneously. Domain registrars had a very good week. The lobster abides, and honestly, in a world full of closed source agents phoning home to corporate servers, an open platform that runs on your own hardware is exactly what we need more of, even if it takes 4 names to get there. Speaking of agents running on your own hardware, somebody went ahead and built them a sandbox so they can't burn your house down. Here's the thing about AI agents running code. Every framework out there, every shiny new tool that lets your AI assistant actually do things, they all hit the same wall. The agent needs to execute code, and how do most of them handle it? Subprocess exec just running whatever the model spits out directly on your machine. That's not a sandbox that's handing a stranger your house keys and saying, try not to break anything. AMLA Sandbox takes a different approach, and it's one that actually makes engineering sense. They're using WebAssembly with WASI to create a genuine isolation layer, no network access, no shell escape, virtual field systeming only. The agent can only touch what you explicitly granted permission to touch. It's capability-based security, same philosophy as Cell 4, where access is something you hand out deliberately, not something that's just lying around for anyone to grab. And the whole thing ships as a single binary, no Docker daemon, no container orchestration, no calling DevOps at 3 a.m, because your sandbox ate itself. But here's where it gets really interesting. The economics of this are compelling. Right now, if you want your AI agent to do 10 things, that's 10 separate tool calls, 10 round trips through the model, 10 invoices from your friendly neighborhood API provider. AMLA lets the agent write one script that does all 10 things inside the sandbox. You collapse the whole chain into a single invocation. The token savings alone would make a CFO weep with joy. Now the beautiful part, this is open source, it's on GitHub. You can install it with pip, you can read every line of code, you can fork it and make it your own. In a landscape where half the AI tooling companies want you locked into their platform, paying per seat, signing annual contracts. Here's a team just putting the blueprints out there. That's the move, that's always the right move. The comments are doing what comments do. Someone immediately points out that any tool you expose is itself a potential escape hatch, which is technically correct, the best kind of correct, and also the entire reason the capability constraint system exists. You can cap amounts, restrict currencies, limit call counts. Is it perfect? Nothing is. But it's a hell of a lot better than crossing your fingers and hoping the language model doesn't decide to rm-rf your home directory. From keeping AI from nuking your file system to someone who actually wants to push pixels the hard way, let's talk about building a CPU rasterizer. So this guy, a university professor teaching OpenGL, gets an itch one day. Not the kind you see a doctor about, the kind where you think, I know the GPU does all this rasterization stuff for me, but what if I just did it myself? And he does. He builds a CPU rasterizer from scratch, documents the whole thing as a tutorial series, and puts it all out there for anyone to follow along. Every commit, every algorithm, every pixel pushed to screen by hand. Now here's what I love about this. We live in an era where people treat the GPU like it's some kind of sacred oracle. You feed it triangles, it gives you frames, nobody asks questions, and that's fine if you're shipping a game. But if you actually want to understand what's happening inside that black box, you've got to build the thing yourself. That's how learning works. You don't understand a car engine by driving to the grocery store. You understand it by taking the damn thing apart and putting it back together with grease on your hands. And this professor, he's not selling you a course for $300. He's not gatekeeping behind a paywall or a waitlist. The code's on GitHub, the blog posts are free, and the whole thing is structured so a student can sit down and follow along from clearing the screen all the way up to a full rendering pipeline. This is what education is supposed to look like. You share the blueprints, all of them, no enterprise tier, no premium access, just here's what I know, come learn it. He's also refreshingly honest about the limitations. This thing is going to be slow, painfully slow. You might get 60 frames per second at 640 by 480 if you're lucky, and anything bigger is going to chug, but that's the whole point. When you watch your hand-rolled rasterizer struggle to draw a rotating cube, you finally appreciate the absolute miracle of engineering sitting in your graphics card. You earn that understanding through suffering, which is frankly how all the best knowledge is acquired. The practical applications aren't nothing either. If you're interested in compute shader rendering, the kind of stuff Nanite does in Unreal, the algorithms are basically the same. Or if you're one of those FPGA people building actual hardware, this is your on-ramp. Understanding what the GPU does is step one before you try building your own. And this tutorial series hands you that understanding for free on a plate with source code. That's a builder sharing his work, and that's always worth celebrating. Speaking of brilliant people sharing knowledge for free, let's talk about a guy who made it a goddamn art form. So Richard Feynman's son, Carl, just dropped a thread about his dad's side hustles, and it's exactly the kind of thing that makes you love the guy even more. Here's a Nobel Prize-winning physicist, one of the greatest minds of the 20th century, and apparently he spent chunks of his free time consulting for random businesses. Not because he needed the money, because he was pathologically curious about how things worked, including things that had absolutely nothing to do with quantum electrodynamics. Now the details are a little thin here because this is a Twitter thread, and Twitter is of course a closed platform owned by a billionaire who renamed it after a letter of the alphabet, like a toddler who just learned the ABCs. So we're working with what Carl shared and what people managed to mirror on Nitter and X-Cancel, because God forbid information just be freely accessible on the internet in 2026. But here's what kills me about Feynman's approach. He wasn't showing up as some management consultant with a deck full of synergy charts. He was showing up as a guy who genuinely wanted to understand how a business operated. The way you'd want to understand how a lock works or why a spinning plate stays up. He'd learn about the operation, ask questions nobody else thought to ask, and occasionally offer a suggestion that came from so far outside the industry's frame of reference that it was either brilliant or completely useless. That's the scientific method applied to everything. That's a mind that refuses to turn off. One commenter asks if you have to be a God-tier Nobel laureate to get that kind of gig, and the answer is no. You just have to be genuinely curious and willing to look stupid asking basic questions. Feynman's whole thing was that he wasn't afraid to say, I don't understand, explain it to me like I'm an idiot. Most people are too proud for that. Most people would rather pretend they understand something than admit ignorance and actually learn. The real lesson from Feynman's side hustles isn't about consulting fees or prestige. It's about treating the entire world as your laboratory. Every business, every system, every weird human endeavor is just another puzzle to take apart. And the blueprints for that kind of thinking are free. Always have been. You just have to be brave enough to ask dumb questions. Speaking of building things in weird places, some guy literally invented the Mars rover's suspension system in his goddamn garage. You know what I love about this story? A guy named Don Bickler engineered the rocker bogey suspension system for the Mars rover in his garage. Not at NASA headquarters, not in some billion-dollar clean room. In his goddamn garage. The same place where every other world-changing invention gets built while the inventor's spouse wonders what the hell all that noise is about. And here's the beautiful part. This suspension system was so elegant, so brilliantly simple, that NASA used variations of it on every rover since. Sojourner, Spirit, Opportunity, Curiosity, Perseverance, 5 watts of power on that first one. 5 watts. Your bathroom nightlight uses more juice than a vehicle exploring another planet. That's not engineering, that's wizardry with a budget constraint. What kills me is the contrast. You've got companies spending hundreds of millions on self-driving cars that can't handle a pothole in San Francisco. And this guy solves six-wheeled autonomous navigation on rocky alien terrain with what amounts to a couple of levers and a dream. No venture capital, no pitch deck, no Series B funding round, just a brilliant mind and a garage full of parts. That's how real engineering works. You don't throw money at problems, you throw brains at them. Now, the comments are doing that thing where everyone's one-upping each other with tangential connections. Somebody knew a guy on the Sojourner team, somebody else mentions a Burning Man rover car, and my favorite, someone warns you not to read the comments until you've watched the first 4 minutes, which of course guarantees everyone immediately scrolls to the comments. We are a beautifully predictable species, but here's the takeaway that matters. This guy also made hiking gear videos without ever mentioning his NASA background because he didn't want credentials to substitute for evidence. Let the arguments stand on their own, share the knowledge, skip the pedigree. That's the whole ballgame right there. Speaking of letting things stand on their own merits, somebody built an open source app to track your daily routine. And honestly, we could all use the help. So there's a guy on Hacker News who posted his Flutter app called Track Your Routine. It's a task manager. You create tasks, set reminders, organize by category, work, vacation, party, the holy trinity of human scheduling. And look, it's open source. It's on GitHub. The code is right there for anyone to read, fork, or improve. That part I respect. Here's where it gets interesting, though. The Hacker News comments are absolutely roasting this thing, but not for the code, for the README. Multiple people are calling it AI slop. The writing style, the emoji headers, the breathless feature descriptions that read like a marketing brochure nobody asked for. One person literally said they couldn't bring themselves to keep reading. And you know what? The real kicker is not a single screenshot. You built a visual application with a quote-unquote beautiful dark theme, and you didn't include one picture of the damn thing. That's like opening a restaurant and describing the food over the phone. Now here's the tension. The comments also include someone saying, hey, building a Flutter app is a real achievement, and they're right. It is cross-platform, Firebase sync, local notifications, that's actual engineering work. But task management apps are the hello world of productivity software. There are approximately 9,000 of them. So if you're going to put yours out there, you better show me why yours matters. But I'll tell you what saves this whole thing. The kids shared the blueprints, open source, MIT license. Presumably Firebase is a Google dependency, sure. And I'd love to see a self-hosted backend option, but the code itself is out there for anyone to learn from. That's the move. You build something, you share it, you let people tear it apart and make it better. The comments are harsh, but they're honest, and honest feedback on open code beats polite silence on a closed product every single time. You know, some days you just sit back and marvel at how determined we all are to build things, whether the world's ready for them or not. This has been your daily tech feed for Hacker News for January 30th, 2026. This podcast is entirely AI generated. Voice inspired by George Carlin, scripts by Claude Opus 4.5, voice by Quen3 TTS. Not affiliated with Hacker News or Y Combinator. Now go build something in your garage that outlasts every prediction. We'll see you back here tomorrow.